This is Rutherford Issues, hitting right at what matters most to all of us here in the heart of Tennessee. From Murfreesboro to Smyrna, Eagleville to Laverne, Leanna to Barfield, and everywhere in between. If it matters to you, you'll hear about it in the next hour here on Rutherford Issues.
Today's show, focused on North Rutherford County, is brought to you by Gill's Ace Hardware in Smyrna on Nissan Drive in Gillsville, 459-4457. Gill's Ace Hardware, the helpful place.
And good afternoon, fun lovers and truth seekers from the downtown Nashville YMCA. Brian Barrett along with you, and we'll be soon joined by State Representative Mike Sparks and others joining us here today as we come to you from Nashville on our program presented by Gill's Ace Hardware on Nissan Drive in Gillsville. They're in beautiful Smyrna, where it's sunny and 63 degrees, same here in downtown Nashville. Today's show focusing on the month of February and its focus on Black History Month. And I think we're going to have some state representatives joining us, John DeBerry being one of those, and others, to talk about the significance of the celebrations that go on throughout the month of February as we remember Black history throughout the state of Tennessee and around the country. So that's where we'll be in conversation here today. On the program, as I was mentioning, it's 63 degrees and sunny, beautiful, beautiful weather out there. I think we can take 63 degrees here in early February, don't you? Really good weather. I don't know what to make of the Groundhog's predictions, however. Punxsutawney Phil saw his shadow, which means six more weeks of winter. But it was, you know, unseasonably warm there. Of course, the sunny skies, obviously, he sees a shadow. But here in Rutherford County, our groundhog, MTSU's Raider 2, Steve Peterson's pet, he keeps him, you know, very close by. I went to the Groundhog Day luncheon today, as a matter of fact, for MTSU baseball, and Raider 2 had on sunglasses, so did not see a shadow. So there you go. There's one way to defeat that. So I think predicting that there will be spring right around the corner. So we'll see about that. See whose prediction is right, I guess. Right now, you don't really think about winter. You think about early spring here. Again, 63 degrees, just a very few clouds here, but mostly sunny skies here in Nashville. Bright blue skies joining us or enlightening us, if you will, from the downtown area, right across the street from Legislative Plaza. It's the downtown YMCA, which was established back in 1875. Some of our good friends from the North Rutherford Y there in Smyrna have made their way to the offices here for the YMCA of Middle Tennessee. And Brad White asked me to mention they've got some adult basketball going on here. So if you live in Rutherford County, but drive back and forth to Nashville, maybe you frequent this YMCA, even if you have a membership at some other. You could take part in their adult basketball league for members only. It's only $40, and they play on Tuesday nights here at the Y, and it starts on February 28th, the Y here in Nashville. And we will, of course, be keeping you updated on all the great things going on at the Y in Murfreesboro and the one in North Rutherford County there in Smyrna and Laverne. So that is a brief look at what we've got coming up at 4 o'clock. It's All Sports Talk, 5 o'clock. Well, no Homeward Bound local news, because at 4 o'clock I've already gotten ahead of myself. You know, it's just that normal routine. Today is a bit abnormal because Zach Troutman is actually in for Robert Rickman today, and we're going to do Homeward Bound local news a tad early from 4 to 4:30. Then Dick Palmer takes over the airwaves. And at North Texas tonight, the Lady Raiders will be in action. 4:30 pregame, 5 o'clock will be the tip. And the men's game will follow with Chip Walters down in Denton, Texas. So I hope you'll join us for that coming up in about, almost an hour. We will have that for you here this evening. So a little different look to your afternoon, but we will have some news coming up after we are completed here. Of course, Randy O'Brien with the look at traffic all afternoon long, as well as check the weather eye forecast, which is absolutely gorgeous. We'll get all of that this afternoon with Ron Jordan taking a look at the news. So we've got you covered here. When we come back, we're going to have the Huckabee Report. And after that, we will have more conversation here from the downtown YMCA in Nashville as we continue Rutherford Issues, the North Rutherford County Edition, presented by Gills Ace Hardware on Nissan Drive in Gillsville.
I'm Robert McConnell from Robert's Discount Auto Repair in Murfreesboro. What makes us different than other repair shops? We proudly employ Christian technicians. Our mechanics are honest, they do high-quality work, and they only recommend service and repairs that are truly needed for your car or truck. Give us a call at 896-1407 or just stop on by. Remember, at Roberts, we beat the dealership on service and price.
Roberts Discount Auto Repair on Broad, across from Ford of Murfreesboro.
FM 100.5 and 101.9, AM 1450. Now, the Huckabee Report. News and views from Mr. Conservative Mike Huckabee. Brought to you by
Mills Family Pharmacy at 2898 South Church Street.
This is the Huckabee Report for Thursday. I'm Mike Huckabee from Santa Rosa Beach, Florida.
This is Chad Mills with Mills Family Pharmacy.
And this is Rebecca Mills.
We're a family-owned and operated business, and when you come in my doors, we try to treat everybody with dignity and respect. We just try to treat everybody like their family.
We're talking with customers at Mills Family Pharmacy. We asked customer Chris Ashley why he shops at Mills.
Great customer service, and Chad and Rebecca go out of their way to take care of every need for my family.
Mills Family Pharmacy, helping your family stay healthy. Mills Family Pharmacy is on South Church across from Indian Hills.
Yesterday, top Obama administration officials briefed Senate leaders on plans to transfer up to five Taliban prisoners from Gitmo to Qatar. Two of the senators said it was related to the ongoing reconciliation efforts as U.S. troops leave Afghanistan. There are fears that as soon as U.S. troops are gone, the Taliban, with assistance from Pakistan, are going to move right back in and take over. Well, John McCain, who was in on the meeting, said that if the idea is that we're going to hand over these terrorists in exchange for a statement from the Taliban that they will renounce international violence, then it's really, really bizarre. McCain said many foreign policy experts would say they are rope-a-doping us. Here's my question. Are we really getting rope-a-doped if we know exactly what they're doing, but we go along with it anyway? Or are we just being dopes? Both Mitt Romney and President Obama got a hard lesson in watching their tongues this week. Romney doing some damage control after he allegedly said that he was not concerned about the very poor. Naturally, the Obama campaign quickly painted him as uncaring and out of touch with the common people. Now, in the full quote, Romney said the very poor already have social programs in place and the very rich can take care of themselves, but he's concerned about the middle class. Ironically, at the same time, Obama was fighting his own accusations of being out of touch with suffering Americans. At his internet town hall on Monday, a woman asked why her husband, who's a semiconductor engineer, hasn't been able to find a job in 3 years. He said that was interesting, since he'd heard that there were plenty of jobs in that field. Well, it wasn't just his seeming lack of awareness of the bad job market that upset people. It was his choice of a word to describe the couple's plight. Interesting. He's been compared to Mr. Spock on Star Trek before, but critics say that made him sound as detached as Spock staring at an alien bug under a microscope. If I had to offer both any advice, it'd be that from now on, find every problem that anyone brings up to be something that you are deeply concerned about, whether it's interesting or not. Up next, the right way to share the wealth. You went to bed with your life savings in the bank, and you woke up broke. That's because an ID thief stole your identity, took over your bank accounts, and stole everything, including your retirement. And then it hit you. Why didn't your identity theft protection help stop this? Well, because you didn't have the most comprehensive ID theft protection service available, LifeLock Ultimate. They brought it to my listeners first. I got it, and you need it. LifeLock goes way beyond guarding your identity, your good name, and credit. Now LifeLock is the only identity theft protection company that monitors bank accounts for takeover fraud. Look, LifeLock can't protect you or your bank accounts if you're not a member. So call now. Mention HUCK60. You'll get 60 risk-free days of LifeLock proactive identity theft protection, plus a free document shredder with your annual enrollment. Now, if you're not happy, you call LifeLock and cancel within 60 days of enrollment for a full refund. See LifeLock.com for details. Call 1-800-240-LOCK. That's 1-800-240-LOCK. 1-800-240-LOCK. Finally, a salute to a Hucks hero from down under. Ken Grinda owned a bus company that's been in Melbourne for 66 years. His employees were concerned when he recently sold the company. But no worries, mate. He not only secured their jobs as part of the deal, but he also took $15 million of the proceeds and handed it out as surprise bonuses. Some were over $100,000. But then they were based on length of service, and one man had worked for him for 52 years. Grinda said a company is only as good as its people, and his are fantastic. And this is the Huckabee Report.
Catch Mike Huckabee's views on the day's news every morning and afternoon here on Rutherford County's Place to Talk, WGNS. The Huckabee Report is brought to you by
Mills Family Pharmacy at 2898 South Church Street.
The savings are big at Gill's Ace Hardware in Smyrna. Here's Jenny Williams.
We pride ourselves on customer service. Our sales associates are here to help you find exactly what you need. We've been a part of the Smyrna community since 1975 and are locally owned and operated. Shop local with your neighbors at Gill's Ace Hardware. We'll help you get in, get help, and get on with your life. Gill's Ace Hardware on Nissan Drive at Jefferson Pike.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware for.
Rutherford Issues on the Good Neighbor Network, Rutherford County's place to talk.
Today's show, focused on North Rutherford County, is brought to you by Gill's Ace Hardware in Smyrna.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
And we are back from the YMCA here in downtown Nashville, joined by State Representative Mike Sparks. How are you?
Hey, Brian, doing good.
Busy week?
Yes, sir.
Beautiful weather down here in Nashville.
Yeah, it's been pretty nice.
Same thing down in North Rutherford County, by the way.
Yeah, God's country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Well, I think a few of our guests here may think that it's a little further west of here, God's country.
Yeah.
Well, what do you think?
Well, you know, that's one thing that's interesting. You talk to someone from whether Bristol or Manchester or Jackson, they always kind of refer to there as God's country.
Yeah. You know? Well, what are we here to talk about today?
Well, you know, we try to change up a little bit with the show, and I think the past few years, I think we've covered Black history every February, and John, Representative John DeBerry was up with us last year, and Representative Brenda Gilmore, and John DeBerry's back up here with us today, and I've got Representative Camper, both out of Shelby County, coming up with us, and I appreciate them coming up, and we're going to talk about really whatever they want to talk about, and a little bit about the legislature, probably a little bit about Black History Month, and we've got some one thing that was I kind of found out about 2 months ago was the first Black state representative come out of North Rutherford County. I don't know if it was I think it may have been out of the Jefferson community out towards near Smyrna there, and Sampson Keeble, and he served up here. I believe it was one term. Correct me if I'm wrong, John. One term back in 1873. Okay.
Well. Representative DeBerry decided to come back, but what happened to, did you have to fill Representative Gilmore's spot?
No, I wanted to change up a little bit, and then I asked John, I said, John, who would you want to come up? And I hope I'm not putting him on the spot. And he said Camper. I was like, okay, we'll have Camper up.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that.
It's wonderful to have you along here with us to talk to the folks here in Rutherford County. Mike is one of the many great representatives we have here in Nashville. Serving a big city, the state's largest population, Representative Camper, I would say is a tall task, isn't it?
It is a tall task. You have people with varying views, varying backgrounds, and just lot of different demographics that you have to make sure that their voice is heard and, try to vote in a way that represent what the people believe in. And sometimes it gets challenging.
Do you work closely with the other legislators in Shelby County, like Representative DeBerry here?
Yeah, I do. I think we all try to as much as we can. A lot of our districts are similar in terms of the population we have, but there's other parts of Shelby County that's a little bit different, and sometimes a bill may impact one segment of the population differently than the other. So you try to work through your differences before you ever get into a committee situation, so that once you come into the committee, you've already worked through any potential problems that people may have. So I do that. I feel pretty well, and Representative John DeBerry does too.
Representative DeBerry, the districts are, I guess, very densely populated, not very large. How many represent Shelby County? Do you have any idea?
I think the delegation altogether is 22 members, is it not? And as Karen said, Representative Camper said, it's very diverse. Suburban areas as well as the urban areas, black, white, Republican, Democrat, rich, poor. Most of our districts are very eclectic to that extent, and I think that's one of the good things about Memphis. You can start on one end of a street with mansions and end up with shanties on the other end of it.
That's true.
And that's kind of the way Memphis is. It makes it interesting for us because it forces us to look at issues from different angles, which is one of the reasons why I think we've probably seen rather contentious at times. But that's because, you know, you can be in very close proximity and serve a very different constituency. And it forces us to work out our issues.
So you not only have maybe in some districts they represent a medium in terms of the constituents. Maybe they make, $50,000 to $75,000 a year, where you may have a group of that, you may have a group on the higher end and one on the lower end. You're kind of from the highs to the lows of all aspects, economics and so on.
Right. You have all the socioeconomic groups and they live in very close proximity. And they all have the same concerns. Everybody's worrying and dealing with keeping a roof over the head, keeping the family fed, educating their children. We realize that because of different means, some have access to greater things than others. But, you know, what we do is try to provide fairness for everybody.
That has to be hard, though. Is it not hard that you're representing so many different people? I mean, you have one on one side telling you we need this and the other saying, no, we need this.
Yeah, but that's why it's important to have your community meetings, all the neighborhood associations I go to. And even within the neighborhood association, sometimes they're on different ends of the spectrum. But when you talk to them about what it is you're trying to accomplish with your legislation or with any piece of legislation that's going on, then you get input from them because they're the ones that's going to be impacted by it. So that way you can really have a more comprehensive look at solving whatever the problem is. And I mean, it's going to be winners and losers sometimes, but being in the community, seeing what their needs are, trying to meet their needs, trying to hear, let them hear from you, and then you hear from them, and then they feel like, well, okay, I did have input. I didn't get everything I wanted, but they heard me, they understood me, but I also understood where they were coming from. So that helps.
There's a lot of pressure, it seems, Mike, with that. I mean,
well, it is.
You know that you're in that position and have to make a decision that's best for your area, even though some are going to love it, some are going to hate it, some are not going to
really
care about
it. And I was telling someone the other day, it seems like, you know, I could want sunshine tomorrow, and a guy who sells umbrellas is going to be against it, you know. And you see that, and it is challenging because, to me, it's right versus wrong sometimes. And some things, I mean, I've got a couple of bills. I think they're great bills. I think they're the right thing to do. And I've already got pushback against some of them. And to me, it's like this stands for good. And that if you're against it, it's evil on a couple of these bills. And, you know, but you got to look at it from other people's perspective sometimes. And I had a guy tell me the other day, he said, Mike, he said, you know, You could, he said, you know, even if that bill don't pass this year, stay on it. You know, it may take you a few years to get it passed, but you got to stay on it, you know. And it is challenging because The cool thing about this position at IC, and I think both these other representatives could agree with me, I see this as kind of ministry. You know, and, you know, I've been asked to be a deacon at church, and I turned it down. And I get real passionate about issues sometimes. And I think the church doesn't do enough sometimes. I think they should be more involved in these issues and more involved in the community. But, you know, your family really don't even understand some of the issues that you deal with. But I had a guy in office earlier, and we're going to write him a letter and try to help him. He's got a 20 years ago, he had a bad record, and got some good references. We're going to try to help him with a job situation. And me and him got talking. And, you know, you really want to make an impact. And you know, I think people can't relate sometimes to what you really deal with. But sometimes just showing up. And this guy was a pastor, too, you know. And he said, man, he says, like him, going to visit someone in the hospital. Just showing up.
Yeah.
He said, I ain't no doctor. He said, you know, I don't know nothing about the medical field. He said, but if I just show up. And that's the cool thing about this. Sometimes just showing up makes a difference.
It does. Mm-hmm.
Mike seems to always point out that Representative DeBerry is a pastor down there, too. And he said he's heard you do a little fiery talking every now and then.
Well,
I think you get him fired up at legislative breakfast every now and then.
Oh, yeah, every now and then. But
you spoke last week, didn't you?
Yes, 2 weeks ago. Yes, I did. We've got 99 members, all of whom are good speakers and good presenters. Which is almost a requirement getting there in the first place. So, you know, I feel blessed to have the opportunity to work with the congregation. I feel blessed to be able to use whatever skills I have to present the case of those people that I serve. But one of the things I think that's a challenge for all of us, it's to be statesmanly. It's very easy to have narrow vision and focus simply on what may be good for our little part of the world, mm-hmm. which is what, you know, I understand our first responsibility to the people that elected us. However, we take an oath to serve the state of Tennessee and to serve the United States of America. And whenever we get, and Mike and Karen can tell you, whenever we get in debates that become extremely contentious, it's because we've lost our focus. And once we regain the focus of what's for the better good, what's for the best of the state of Tennessee and for our nation, we usually work our way to a palatable solution. And I think that that's the art of compromise, if you want to use that word, that we often have to work our way to.
You know, I'm not sure if it's a media thing or whatnot. Jonathan Fagan with the Murfreesboro Post is here, and I work in the media. So, but sometimes you see the stories you hear. This is a Republican bill, and Democrats are opposed, and this, that, and the other. Is it really that contentious up here, or is there, for the most part, you work out through those differences to get things done?
Well, of course, I would not be truthful if I didn't say it wasn't contentious. It is contentious, quite often adversarial. But, you know, it's because of our diversity. You know, we talk about the three grand divisions of the state of Tennessee. Well, you know, regardless of what folks outside of the state of Tennessee think, there are three states of Tennessee.
Yes.
When you go west, when you go to the middle of Tennessee, you go east Tennessee, it's like going to a totally different state. You cram 99, I call us the fighting 99, you know. you cram 99 individuals from these various backgrounds, folks who have come from tobacco fields and others who come from factories, some folks who are college professors, others who are farmers, and you put us all in one room, you're going to get some pretty colorful conversation, comments, and argumentation. But that's why you have our speaker, Beth Harwell, she's very good. Before her, Speaker Jimmy Nafee. I've seen them steward over the argument, keep it civil, keep it in check, you know when to use that gavel, give everybody the right to speak and state their case. But at the same time, you got to get the train home at some point, so that we can get something solved.
One thing I admire about John, because I asked to take a back seat. I'm out there at the back. I got to get moved, and I want to do that on purpose to kind of watch some other people, some senior members. And what I like about John, he don't say much. But when he speaks, I promise you, everybody listens.
In the house is listening.
But now y'all got another member, and I ain't going to call his name out because you know who I'm talking about, out of Memphis. And he speaks every 10 minutes, every 5 minutes. And I'm going to tell you, I don't pay no attention to what he says. I'll be honest with you. But when John speaks, I'm going to tell you, everybody looks and they're listening to you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's a big compliment to John, but I think that he's got a lot of influence on and with folks, and I think it's his character, and people know if he's going to speak up on something, it's coming from his heart, and it's the right thing. It's not rhetoric for a front page headline in the paper. It's because he feels deeply convicted about it.
But it's also about relationships that he's mm-hmm. built over the years, and many yeah. members have built over the years, mm-hmm. which drives compromise in times when it's very difficult. But your point about Republican bills and Democratic bills, that's true. That's politics. You got to realize mm-hmm. this. You know, everything do kind of boil down to politics.
We have all parties represented here, I think, don't we?
We do. And it gets a little political at times, but because we have an understanding of that, we still can move forward to do the business of the state. So it does get political at times when you have what one would be perceived as a Republican agenda, or one would perceive as a Democratic agenda. But when you get past all of that, people, based on their relationships, mm-hmm. based on being able to reach across the aisle and say, how do you feel about such and such, and based on cultural diversity and all these things we seek to do, we are able to come up with what we believe is good public policy. And that's really what it's about, good public policy for the state of Tennessee.
When Mike asked me, a good individual to come on, that's why I said Karen. Karen has a military background. She is very meticulous in her research. When she speaks, she knows what she's talking about. The more people we have who come from a professional background, who are not trying to make themselves in politics. You know, Mike comes from a business background, broadcasting background. You know, folks who come who have already achieved certain things in life, and they want to contribute, give back. Then you're going to have better debate. You're going to have more substantial debate. You're going to have debate that's about facts and about getting to a solution rather than I'm trying to make myself. And those individuals who are self-ingratiating, as Mike says, unfortunately, you know, we have some very, very talented people who haven't quite got it yet. Haven't quite got it yet. And once they get it, that you got more influence when you talk less, but when you speak, you got something to say than just constantly talking.
You know that this whole thing, you being a pastor, not to keep dwelling on that, but let's say you've got your deacons or your elders together. I mean, it's kind of the same thing. That they have different opinions. They feel a different way, but they all have what's the greater good for the church to come out of that. At least that should be what it is.
Yes.
Sometimes you may have someone who wants to speak. I mean, it's like a larger version of what you might have at your office or wherever.
Mm-hmm.
But here you're making policy for the state. There's a good deal of pressure on that.
Well, you know, anybody can say there ought to be a law.
Well, sure.
But, you know, three of us make the laws. So that's why it is so important for us that when we say there ought to be a law, we've got to take it serious what we're saying, because what we do from the floor of the House and from the floor of the Senate impacts folks all over the state. And a lot of times we all know, Karen can tell you and Mike can tell you, we passed a bill a few years ago, I believe zero tolerance. Basically, you all know what that is. You can't have drugs or weapons of any type in the schools. Well, when we passed that bill, we're thinking, when we push that green button, we're thinking, you know, guns and Bowie knives and hand grenades and Molotov cocktails. And, you know, we weren't talking about an aspirin and a napkin,
Amen.
A Boy Scout knife on a Boy Scout's uniform. We weren't thinking about those things, but there were children who were impacted.
Yes.
And some of them were put out of school for a whole year because the mama wrapped aspirin in a little girl's on a napkin and put it in the little girl's lunch to take at noon. And that was a drug. And she was, you know, so a lot of times the legislative intent is lost. We have to be extremely careful about what we make law.
Also on that, you know, this week, Representative Camper, the governor, state of the state, and part of that, and some news that came out this week, tougher domestic violence laws, for instance. But that's also going to mean funding and things of that nature. So every time there's a proposal, there's something that goes along with it that, okay, who pays for this? And so just because you have an idea, there should be a law for something. And obviously tougher laws against those who are domestic violence offenders, especially repeat offenders, that sounds like a great idea. But then comes the problem of how do you pay for it?
Well, part of what happens in our legislative process is when we introduce a bill such as that, it goes over to our fiscal review area, and then they'll come up with a fiscal note to let us, to give us a guideline of what this might cost the state over X amount of people, and they come up with a figure and say it'll cost about this amount of money because we'll have to incarcerate or we have to do whatever it is we have to do. But let's just talk about this one particular issue. You talk about domestic violence. Now, in most people's mind, when we talk about domestic violence, and the numbers are probably driven by this, is a husband, wife, a boyfriend, girlfriend, some intimate situation. But domestic violence numbers also include uncle and a nephew, a sister and a brother, two cousins over here at the barbecue. So the numbers that will be given to us in the fiscal review world may say one thing, and the unintended consequence is it's going to cost us more because we got to factor in every potential domestic violence.
It goes back on the synthetic drug issue.
Yeah.
We're trying to make that a felony. Well, that, you know, I run that bill last year and had a $500,000 fiscal note.
Yeah.
You know, but they, one thing that surprised me that the state doesn't do, they don't figure the upside. They don't figure, well, look how many people that, If this threat is out there, these guys will, hopefully some of these guys will be making this decision to sell this stuff. Hopefully it'll keep some young people from being addicted. Hopefully it'll come back, cut down on crime. They don't figure that side. And how many of those kids that are people getting addicted wind up in our jails that's impacting us from that angle? They don't factor in those costs. That surprised me.
Another thing you might also want to think, all of us, both Democrats and Republicans, talk about big government and government intrusion into our lives and government intervening and distracting us from our normal pursuits. But what do we need government for? I think sometimes we in the legislature have got to make a decision as to what do people need us to do? They need us to assist in educating their children. They need us to provide infrastructure, and they need us to protect them. You know, too often we lose our priorities. We've got to decide sometime between a golf course and getting a bunch of crooks off the street.
Yeah.
And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, keeping them off the street as long as we can, especially if they commit certain heinous crimes. And if we've got to decide between an individual, we had a crime here recently where an individual shot his fiance, the girl's mother, and the girl's father. And, you know, I said to myself, if he's had any character, he would have shot himself also, but he didn't do that.
Yeah.
All right, at some point in time, that person has to be incarcerated. I don't want the budget to determine how long to keep that joker in jail.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want somebody saying we can't afford to incarcerate him. I want him in jail as long as he can stay there. And if they can, roll him out in a casket one day.
Yeah.
And whatever that costs, that has to be done. So at some point, we've got to think about these issues. And we're going to have to make some hard, bitter decisions.
Well, John, me and you were talking about 2 weeks ago. And, you know, I was telling you, I was at a Tea Party meeting, and I can get real fired up, you know, at meetings, you know, groups. And then I went to Dr. King's ceremony. And you know, I kind of had problems with both groups, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
And because I see the problems out there. And I think as legislators, we kind of know what's going on a little bit more than the average citizen.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to kind of keep that in because, you know, we've got 10-year-old, 12-year-old girls out there being prostituted. There's people out there pimping girls out now.
Yeah.
Like that. Families. Drug addicts out there in the street. I mean, back in my county, like we know, 36 market owners selling dope to our kids, those synthetic drugs and bath salts and all that stuff. And you see these things, and you hear silence. You don't hear people speaking up on those issues. And, you know, I didn't hear Tea Party people talking about it. But when I was at Dr. King event, I didn't hear them talking about it. And I'm like, you know, I kind of look at, well, what would Christ do if Christ was in this community, if he was a legislator, or if he was whatever, you know, whatever he's doing, he would be talking about these things. I would think he would. You know what I mean? And it just, you see these problems, and it gets back to a like morality, like lack of morality. It's like our country's lost its moral compass, and we've drifted away from that. And what bothers me, we keep trying to invent laws to change men's hearts, and I don't think it's gonna happen.
We find ourselves often, you and Karen and I, we find ourselves sandwiched between two extremes.
Yeah.
There are always going to be extremes. Our job is to find the commonality and the common sense.
Yes.
Because the extremes, that's not their concern. Their concern is whatever their particular views are.
Seems like people are real myopic. You know, they're one or two issue, and then the house could be on fire over here, but they're not paying attention to this house on fire. They're only watching this one issue right here. And our logic, I mean, we've got to look at all these issues. And to me, that's why the drug issue is so pertinent, because I haven't met a lobbyist for the addicts out there. I have not met a lobbyist out there for those that's incarcerated. I haven't met a lobbyist for the fatherless. I hadn't met a lobbyist for the homeless. I hadn't met a lobbyist for other people out there that don't have a voice. They can't donate to campaigns. They can't afford an advocate or a government liaison person. And you look at those things and you think, where's that voice? And that's kind of where I think we come
ourselves. You have to be that voice and be willing to talk with people about it. And I mean, every chance you get, I mean, with your colleagues, you know, and you will find that they'll say, I never thought about it that way.
Right. Well, they don't figure the cost. Because I've run into this with some guys, and they're like, oh, we spend enough money on those issues. I'm like, I ain't said nothing about spending money. Sometimes just awareness.
Yeah.
And you know, I was real disappointed some other day. It was somebody very influential, extremely influential. Well, I'll just say the highest echelon of state government was one of their representatives or one of their people. And I brought up synthetic drug issue. They said, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm like, you don't know about these synthetic drugs. You don't know what's going on. They didn't even have a clue. And I said, you need to go get on YouTube. You need to go do some research. And I seen her 2 days later. Well, now she's doing research.
Yeah.
She's studying it. But didn't cost anything. Sometimes just bring attention. Now, the governor is on board with this stuff. And I like to stay in the state address because he talked about addiction. He talked about the impact on families, you know. And I was really surprised about the state employee raises. That I was shocked with that. But, you know, a lot of folks may not realize that a lot of these employees qualify for food stamps.
Yeah. Well, I think we had reasonable expectation that about this time that there was going to begin to be a slow upswing in the economy.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we're seeing. It's a slight upswing. And it's reasonable to expect that if you have this upswing and you can give them a raise, which they haven't had for a long period of time. And when they did get one last year, it was 1.6, and people thought, well, that's nothing. Well, it's a little bit of something.
Yeah.
And as we get better, maybe we can do more. So I was glad to see that he had that in the budget, because we did have some revenue.
We're going to just keep it right here, because I know that you two need to get back or get on the road and get back toward Memphis. And we've spent all this time talking about government things, and it was supposed to be Black History Month. But I think this is good just – you know, black, white, Hispanic, it doesn't matter. We're all people, and we're all trying to work to do the best for the people. But what is it? What is the significance of being a black legislator? And Representative Camper, I guess we can start with you. Is there a difference now? I mean, versus maybe what it would have been in the 60s or 70s? And I'll preface this by saying, Jonathan Martin at Channel 4 did a piece on Senator Harper, who was first elected in 91, and she was the first elected senator. And I thought, you know, she's known. You think Senator Harper, you think of hats, and you think of of outspoken. But what a great advocate. You know, in our day and time, it's different. But is it? What's your perspective?
I think it is a little bit different, but I also think that there's still a lot of firsts out there for African Americans in various different things in the United States. It's still a lot of people that's going to be the first this or the first that as it pertains to African Americans. As legislators, though, when you look at the fact that we have a representative form of government and you have areas that are predominantly African American, then it's reasonably is to expect that you're going to have African American representation. So I think that's what makes it a little bit different, because the Constitution says it's representative and you have people in your area that are African American, so they vote people that look like them, as they say, or that.
So it's the way it's supposed to be, then, in
it's
that regard.
It's the way it's supposed to be. That's how I feel about it. I don't personally look at myself as an African American legislator. I just look at myself as a legislator for the people. Matter of fact, my slogan is "We the People."
Yeah.
Really. We've
gotten past the days where there has to be, trailblazing in state government. We're past that point. Not to say that there aren't more first ahead,
right.
But it's nothing out of the ordinary.
Right.
But there are some great people who did pave the way for you, not only an African American lawmaker, but also a woman to be able to come here to Nashville.
And no question about it, which is why during a time such as this, Black History Month is still, I feel, relevant to be able to continue to educate about those things, because there are people like my son, 20 years old, that believe that it's always been this way.
Yeah.
They have no idea sometime of the struggle, or you're here because of. So that's why I think it's important to have a Black History Month, to continue to educate people on the history, because so much of it was left out or not talked about, or not discussed, or for whatever reason in America it wasn't put in the history books and these kinds of things. So I think that part of Black history is important to do.
Representative DeBerry, the thing about history is, if we don't remember it, what's the saying? If you don't, you'll
repeat
it.
Don't learn from it, you're condemned to repeat it.
Yeah. That's obviously the case. I guess echoing off of what Representative Camper said, it is important to remember for the younger generations.
Well, I think about my grandchildren. They have absolutely no idea. They live in a world where there's always been color TV. There's always been internet. They have no clue about cars that don't have electric windows. Yeah. And, you can think about all the things that they don't know. And when they go to school and every now and then they'll ask a question, you start talking about Martin King, or you talk about the Civil Rights Movement, or you talk about, it's incumbent upon folks like Karen and myself to talk about it from a positive light.
Right.
I don't want my grandchildren to grow up with animosity or hatred or regret or dread. I want them to understand history as to who we used to be and why it's so wonderful who we are today, and make the positive comparison about how far we all have come.
One thing that impressed me with John last year, I had asked you about Dr. King's speech, the mountaintop speech, and you said, "I was there."
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, really? And then you told me you were the first Black integrated in your school system.
You're trying to make it sound like you're a lot younger and you're
Well, I'm getting old, that's for sure. But I said, well, man, what problems do you have, Representative? And he said, I had no problems. And I kept thinking, I'm thinking of this German Shepherd or fire hoses, or thinking these problems. And I like what you said. You said about your dad, and you talked about your attitude.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my dad, basically when we integrated the schools up in Crockett County, we moved from Memphis to Crockett County. And so I was the first Black to go to the schools there. My family, my brothers and sisters and I integrated the schools in 68. And my dad, I asked him, what do I do? He said, well, you don't scratch your head when it ain't itching. You don't grin when it ain't funny. You'll be a man. He said, you be a man. You give respect, you get it right back. And that small area of Tennessee, in that rural area where I learned how to drive a tractor and bale hay and do farm work as a city boy, was a very positive experience. And a lot of it had to do with where my head was. I didn't go to topple the school, or I didn't go to topple the administration. I went in to get an education.
What's your principal? Remember you told me about your principal?
Principal was Mr. Strange. That was his name. And he told, and I was told that everything that he had thought
about at that time the word was colored yeah. children. He said I had changed it in 2 years. In other words, he had to apologize, and I had several people say the same thing. Basically, we're just folks. We're a lot more similar than we are different. Yeah. And it's good to have Black History Month because, sure. as Karen said, these are things that aren't often well represented in the history book. It leaves a gap there where certain things don't make sense. You fill the gap in, both Black children, white children, yep. Hispanic and children, everybody. Oriole. Everybody says, oh, okay, that makes sense. That makes sense now.
You know, we've got to remember that, you know, the stories that my father would tell about how they, you know, walk to school 10 miles back and forth in the snow, you know, whatever.
We've all heard that story.
I didn't have that experience. I had to ride the bus 15 minutes back. But as those stories go along, you know, my kids, just the technology and all those things that change, and we have to remember where we've come and where we've been.
Absolutely.
There was a television show about Super Bowl commercials, and the one from 1984 that caught all of the attention was how the world was going to be changed by this new computer. Right. And it was the Apple computer back in 1984, you know.
Right.
And, you know, my kids just couldn't grasp 1984. You know, it seemed like so long ago was their color television.
Yeah.
And I know those things seem small, but if we don't remember, Mike and I didn't know, but now we've passed it along here on the radio, that the first Black state representative was from North Rutherford County.
I need to remind these two folks that he's a Republican too.
All my ancestors, all my folks
are mine too.
Yeah, I told Joe that after I announced it today about doing this. I sat down and I told Joe, you know Joe Towns, you know how Joe can be, and he's out of Shelby County, and I said Joe, because he said, man, I worked on that bus. We worked on that, you know, together. And I said, well, you know, he's a Republican, don't you? He said, yeah. He said, I used to be a Republican till y'all screwed it up. You know, kind of give me a hard time.
Can I say for a moment
yes, ma'am.
About history and why I think it's important? And I don't know if you remember this, Representative G. Barrett, but a few years back, there was a discussion in Memphis to move the Nathan Bedford Forrest statue
from that park.
Yeah. And take it, I can't remember, back to Elmore Cemetery or somewhere. And it was it was just a big to-do in Memphis about it.
Yeah.
And I didn't want it moved. I was one of the ones that it wasn't popular to say this.
Yeah. Right.
But in my mind, everybody needs to see history. Mm-hmm. Because I'm not going to know about my son won't know about a Nathan Bedford Forrest if we move it and try to put it somewhere where it's not seen. I need to be able to say this is what Memphis was at some point.
And it's
important to know that.
The good and the bad.
Those busts are just Nathan Bedford Forrest. The bust is just 20 feet from
the Keeble one.
From the Sampson Keeble.
Right.
Well, you know, when we were growing up, we had, you know, as a kid, before internet and all this stuff, we played outside.
Correct.
I mean, I know that's novel these days, but we played outside. And, you know, we had the Yankee caps, we had the Confederate caps, and we chose sides. I mean, you know, the connotation wasn't there.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I'm playing with all Black kids.
Yeah.
And the point was, it all depends on what we pass on.
Yeah.
We can pass on hatred. We can pass on prejudice. We can pass on all types of surmising, all types of things that are going to eventually undermine our nation.
Yeah.
Or we can pass on history.
Mm-hmm.
History, people get a chance to make up their minds on history. Mm-hmm. And they get a chance to set aside children who don't look like them. And they realize, as I said, that we're a lot more similar than we are different. And then history fills in the spaces of how we got to where we are.
So
we're a nation of immigrants. That's the beauty of the Statue of Liberty. People came on these shores from all over the globe with nothing but the clothes on their backs. And this is the one nation in the history of the world that has taken care of the least, the little, the lost, and the last, and allowed everybody to prosper, even in segregation, African Americans prospered. So I'm proud of this nation. I'm proud of who we are and what we stand for. I just hope that we will continue to learn from our history, grow from our history,
that's right,
and not repeat our history.
Correct.
On that note, we'll say thanks, and thanks for playing with a Republican representative from Rutherford County.
That's my good buddy.
Thank you for going easy on me.
Have a safe trip back to Memphis. It's always a pleasure. Representative Camper, it was good to meet you today.
Yes, sir.
And we'll do it again sometime soon. All
look
right?
Forward to it.
Very good. That's State Representative Karen Camper joining us, and also State Representative John DeBerry. We're going to take a break. I know we've got we're well over here on Rutherford Issues, presented by Gills Ace Hardware today.